Whether you're young or old, male or female, from Cape to Cairo, you just can't help yourself but love. You just can't help yourself but love Radio Love.
That is a super dope mix from John Cutler. Yes, time now. It is 1:30. Masbuyage on the other side. We are coming back with that interview, ABC Shido, with Ututuzani Zuma. Please, please do not touch the dial. You don't want to miss this one.
Yeah, I want you to turn it up.
Just feel the sunrise.
Join MTN. Get 10 gigs for 99 rand. Be a buzzer on the brand new MTN Buzzer Gigs Pay-As-You-Go price plan. That's 5 gigs anytime data and 5 gigs night express valid for 30 days for only 99 rand once off to stream, share, chat and live it up on Mzansi's Buzzer network. So get an MTN starter pack at an MTN store or selected retailers and dial *137# to join MTN Buzzer Gigs. T&Cs apply. It's go time everywhere you go. MTN.
It is go time. It is the Buzzer Network. Do hook yourself up with that. So yes, it is time for that interview. Asikesayishokuthi, we are gonna have the one and the only. It is Ututuzani Zuma, once dubbed, not even once, I think currently he is the People's Bay, and also Obaba Wemalelingi. Ututuzani, how are you, my brother?
I'm doing good. How are you doing, my
boss? I'm good. Thanks. It is Kwezi. The show is called Line to Fight. Thank you so much for borrowing us your time today and taking this interview.
Thank you, Kwezi, and greetings to the Lunchify audience on Radio Langley this afternoon.
Yes, sir.
We're in the building. We're here. Let's go.
Let's go, man.
Let's go.
Yeah, in introducing you, we actually kind of felt a bit inclined to use maybe like a nickname or something, because it is known to the former president. We also know him as Uzuma, Ngamalala, Umsholozi. But then, so curiously, we've been wondering, Uti, do you have like a young nickname that maybe we can address you with either now or in the near future?
No, I think my name is long enough to design it. So how you chop that up is up to you. But as long as it's within those parameters, I'm happy.
Yeah, no, I get you.
Yeah, so, but normally, yeah, people just call me by my first name, to design it.
Oh yes, no. Truly noted. So people don't actually really know that you grew up in exile and being born in Maputo, and also just hopping between Zimbabwe and Zambia as well. I do believe that also comes with certain experiences that have guided you moving forward in life. Would you mind sharing some of those experiences?
No, not a problem. I think firstly the most important thing about having experience outside of the place of birth is learning how to understand other people's upbringing, cultures, and countries. You know, it's a very important thing for us to have in this day and age, because we're living in a global community, and especially in Africa. So being born and raised in places like Mozambique, Zimbabwe, Zambia, and having had the opportunity to live in many other places in the world, I think puts us in a better position to understand how the world really works and how South Africa should be fitting into the rest of the world.
Wow.
Yeah, it was an interesting experience.
Yeah.
It was confusing, of course, because you are a South African kid, not living in South Africa, and everything else is non-South African, and all the information that you're getting is from home. Issues of apartheid, of the ANC, Communist Party, various leaders that we come across, some of them had an opportunity to grow up and living in these countries. And, you know, the confusing part was not being able to grow up in your home country. But besides that, it was challenging.
Yeah.
But it made us better for who we are today.
Okay, and I also do believe what it makes you understand a wide variety or a diversity of people that much better.
Pan-Africanism is not something we talk about, it's something that we've lived, so we are clear what needs to be done.
Done. So, okay, as time goes on, especially Konalim's and the race narrative is actually changing constantly in the country. And it has actually limited some things to a point. In your case, I do believe Uti, love has truly prevailed. What are some of the things you think people should know about interracial marriage, and how do you feel we have progressed as a country in terms of becoming accepting of that as a norm, rather than you can't date this ethnic group because you belong to this ethnic group?
Yeah, I think in my life, I've lived my life without limitations. And once again, I think it goes back to my upbringing. You know, growing up in a country like Mozambique, it was very cosmopolitan for that time. The first school that I went to was an international school, so it was a mix of diplomats from all over Africa, Europe, Canada, U.S., South America. So my upbringing was one of not seeing certain limitations when it came to the racial divide.
Yeah.
But we do understand that there's issues and there's certain views from different racial groupings, not just in South Africa, but globally. But from my side, I think we need to get to a point where we take our energy and focus away from racial issues and deal with it from a humanitarian perspective. Because if we're not working together, we're going nowhere. Whether you're black, white, Indian, colored, albino, and even foreign within a South African perspective.
Yeah.
If we do not take that deliberate step to working together, we're not going to build this country. And then outside of that racialism or non-racialism, there's also the issue of understanding each other's cultural backgrounds. Because one of the issues we have in this country, whether we like it or not, and it feeds into our politics, is the issue of black-on-black. Black-on-black being tribalism, whichever part of the country you're from.
Yeah.
There's certain issues that exist, and that feeds into a whole host of other things. So if we look at issues such as racialized or interracial relationships, whether it be in business or in relationships, marriages, as just a normal relationship, even though there are different systems and belief structures that come into these relationships, I think we'll go much further.
Okay. And then that whole issue of inclusivity, as you've stated, that you were exposed to being around different cultures in your upbringing, do you feel that it's something that we can teach in schools, or is something that should be instilled at home, or should it be a combination of the two?
No, my way of looking at things is it should be less of talking and more of action in whatever it is that we do.
Yeah.
So if we exemplify it, if we live it amongst ourselves, so the people that we may know that are not from our religious belief systems or racial systems, if we grow up, and which we have with a lot of the guys and girls, if we grow up and we exemplify that, we can live without having these blockages and these hurdles in our lives because of the color of our skin, our cultural preference, our cultural beliefs and our religious preferences.
Yeah.
We go a much longer way. So it's something that needs to be more of a lifestyle than an education based. Education is important. People need to be sensitized to these issues and socialized to these issues, but that can't be done without living it. So we need to be living in these conditions and showing people around us that are we doing it?
Yeah.
It should be easier for everyone else to do it too.
100%, my brother. So yeah, moving on to more of the political side of things. What have you possibly observed as the missing pieces to what you might call quote unquote the puzzle that all leaders, irrespective of their political party, have been truly missing? I mean, all the four Abantu baseMzansi to start believing again that we can move forward as a country.
Sorry, my brother, did you say old leaders or all leaders?
No, all leaders.
All leaders, okay.
Yeah, all leaders.
All right, I think what is missing in our country, and we've quickly gotten to a point where we place people on pedestals. So we have leaders that are put on pedestals, and we see a certain level of decorum that disappears, a certain level of arrogance that appears, because these are all people that have been just like us. And we need to remember that leaders are placed there by the people, not the other way around.
Yes.
Leaders are here to serve the people. People are not here to serve the leadership. And I think one of the, a few of the missing puzzles in our politics today is, I think if we move away from politics of desperation and politics to politics of inspiration, I like saying that because it'll get us to a point where we progress further in our country, is you have people that are doing and making decisions based on desperate measures.
Yeah.
As opposed to appealing to people and getting to a point where people say, you know what, this person doesn't even need to come and sell themselves, we believe in them. And that speaks to the whole way that the campaign during election season works, everything from door to door. If you are over-actively campaigning closer to an election, it means you haven't done your job.
Oh, yes.
You shouldn't be going door to door, knocking, looking for votes. People should be coming out of their homes and saying, you know what, I believe in this person, I believe in this institution, I believe in this cause. I will put my vote in this person's direction because I believe in what they're saying or what they do. It shouldn't be the other way around. A few other things that are missing in our political system is we place too much emphasis on political parties.
Yeah.
You know, the interesting thing is on voting day, you know, we'll be hanging out the night before having a prize, the next day, when you get to the voting station, the primary school, everyone is looking at each other because now you've got some guy wearing an ANC T-shirt, another wearing an opposition party T-shirt of sorts, and now all of a sudden you are on a different divide. It shouldn't be like that. As much as people believe in their colors and their banners and then what those political parties mean to them as per policy or direction that they want to drive their communities, then so be it.
Yeah.
Now we start hating each other. We start seeing people getting killed, literally, because people are hell-bent on getting into positions. So when it comes to the politics of today and all the leaders that exist, I think we should be less focused on trying to vie for positions, because all that's happening now is you have too many generals sitting in the political army, if I may say that, and not enough soldiers. That's what happened, and I think the results of this election that we just come from show that.
Yeah.
And then finally, I think we need to have a leader that's more political leadership that is more amenable to society. You can't have leaders that exist on an extreme age perspective. So you have men and women in their 60s, 70s starting off political careers, and you know, they're completely detached from the reality on the ground. They're not amenable to the population, which is on average 28 years old in this country, majority being the youth. They're out of touch with youth issues. So you can't have people that are not young-minded or young in age dealing with issues that young people face. It doesn't work like that. So we need to reinvent politics. We need to reinvigorate politics with new ideas, younger, fresh minds, a new energy. And young people need to take themselves seriously, because young people are not taking themselves seriously. And I think that is the biggest problem.
Yeah.
Because you can't point fingers at, this leader is too old. What are you doing about it?
Yeah.
Who are you backing? How are you getting involved?
Yeah.
You know, these are things that we need to focus on. So that's my few cents on that question, sir.
Yeah. And how would you suggest we usher in that new age of leaders? Because I'm also for that as well, but then at the same time I do feel we have to be careful not to do it with too much haste, because we can still use the experience from the elders.
100%.
So now we can't just throw in all the young people all at once. So how would you suggest that we gradually do that, so that we don't find ourselves in a position whereby we do have young people, but then we kind of lack the experience or the political acumen?
Yeah, so I think there are a lot of young, incredible, smart individuals that exist in this country from all walks of life. Whether it's people sitting with the highest qualifications or whether it's the common man on the street, there's people that have a lot to offer to what Project South Africa is. And I always say we shouldn't only be focusing purely on politics.
Yeah,
because this journey that we are on is not politics specific. Politics is but one piece of the puzzle. We need to get people involved in humanitarian causes. We need to get more people involved in the corporate sector, business world. We need to get more people involved into entrepreneurship, because you need to, you know, jobs are not going to come out of thin air. People need to create them. We need to create value. We need to create wealth, because that's what is missing in our country. The missing middle, which is the middle class, needs to be built up.
Yeah.
That needs to start somewhere. But when it comes to the older fleet of politicians that I speak about, the problem we have is the non-willingness of the older fleet to say, okay, guys, here we are. We are of age, political age, and just life. Come along, guys. We'll show you the ropes. We'll give you the cheat codes, the gems, the path that has been walked, and we'll make this journey a much more seamless journey. Because what that does is it creates a relationship between the young and the old generation. It creates a trust. Right now, there is no trust, because you have people who are of age sitting and saying, yo, we're not letting go.
Yeah.
We are here and we're staying here. And then you've got younger guys that are coming, guys and girls coming up in the system, that are becoming more impatient.
Yeah.
And you know, we'll start making certain uncalculated decisions and risky decisions purely from the basis of, hey, the old guard is not trying to give us a space. So I completely agree with you. There needs to be a joining of hands between the younger and the older generation. Yeah. And there needs to be a handover of sorts, just like in any corporate business.
Yeah.
Whenever someone retires or is planning on retirement, there's a handover. There is no handover process, and there's no plan of handing over any political processes in this country. And that's why we're saying, you know what, if that's the case, we'll push through the system from the bottom, because that gap is massive. Because if a crop of politicians disappear today for any magical reason, we have a big problem. There hasn't been a continuity program. I think it's important for the two to get along, and I firmly believe that the older generation has got a whole lot more to offer than a lot of people believe.
Yeah.
But they need to be active about it, and they're not being active.
Okay. I just want to pick your brain as well on something that has happened recently. Because at a point, Cole actually represented about a third of our economic wealth. And currently, for lack of a better word, it is being threatened to be discontinued as an energy source. But do you perhaps agree with this stance? And again, I don't mean to put you in a corner here. Or maybe, what are the possible repercussions you feel we'll face if we let this happen? Besides, I think what we would say is the obvious, the job losses and so on.
Yeah, I think, firstly, You're not asking me any corner that will put me into a corner.
Yeah.
Because there's an old meme that made around that Wanglamalala, we were born in rondavels and not square houses.
That's what it is. So can't put you in a corner. That gets me. Yeah.
But I think we that's also, so South Africa does not have a plan. That's my view. There's been certain political gimmicks and rhetoric that have been thrown around, and political jargon where people say all sorts of things that look good but practically are not possible.
Yeah.
The energy crisis and where we're at. I mean, it shouldn't be this way, because if you look at what was announced by the Ministry of Energy and the Presidency many years ago, was creating what they call an energy mix. Energy mix being the traditional old school coal-fired power generation, introducing nuclear, and then renewable energy sources such as wind, solar, biofuels, and whatever else, garbage, whatever else exists out there to further alleviate the issues of power in our country, electrification in our country.
Yeah.
So what we do, and this is what I have a problem with in our country, in our leaders, is we always play the copycat game. We're always playing behind the curve and instead of playing in front of the curve. Yes, we have issues in the world. We just had COP, I think, 26, which is the environmental / emission / carbon, etc. conference that happened.
Yeah.
That speaks on getting the world to move away from being massive pollutants to taking care of the environment, which I fully agree with.
Yeah.
But if you look at a country like South Africa, and you'd mentioned a third of the South African economy, and as a matter of fact, majority of its power generation lies with the coal-fired generation sector of the power the power, the energy mix, sorry.
Yeah.
You cannot just turn off the switch. And I feel like that's exactly what is happening. As much as you want to wish away emissions and take advantage of carbon credits on large scale in South Africa and in the world, you can't just turn off power stations and not expect to have the issues you have today of load shedding.
Because there's also a large workforce to consider as well.
And I was getting to that point because as much as you have the energy mix in place without big ticket interventions such as nuclear, it's going to be a very difficult thing to do because there's only so much generation that will be available from these renewables. They'll be there, but there'll be availability issues. We're seeing it already. And then moving on to the next point is the jobs creation. Yes, renewables will create jobs, but I mean, if you look at what coal and the coal sector has done in South Africa, it's built towns.
You can't really match that up.
You can't. It's a very difficult thing to match. We can never say never, but at the moment, a very difficult thing to do because we need to do it at a steady pace, and we haven't done so.
Yeah.
Because besides the actual opportunities of coal that exist, meaning coal supply in the power stations, and there are microeconomies that have been created off the coal industry, not just the generation and supply of power by the power utility. You have logistics, so you've got trucks and buses that run up and down in the mines. So you've got these truck owners who are going to take a big hit. You've got the truck driver that drives those trucks and those buggies in and around the mines that deliver the coal. They'll be jobless. With those trucks and buggies, you've got insurance companies that insure these trucks and buggies and even the drivers of the vehicles.
Yeah. Then there's mechanics as well.
By the way. And then everything else that adds on to it. So you're not only destroying the traditional coal supply from mine to power station as a fossil fuel. You're destroying the livelihoods of people that have built their careers, that have built their livelihood off the spin-offs that the coal generation opportunities, coal mining
and it's not only like one family which is directly affected. Like there's extended families which are actually.
My brother said whole towns. Whole towns will shut down. Literally towns. It's not even. It's a much, much bigger problem. Yeah. There'll be whole towns that will disappear, will become, as they call them, ghost towns, which is something that we need to be very, very careful about.
Yeah. And then, radio in time now. So I just want us to quickly get into philanthropy, about business as well. We know that you're passionate about empowering the youth and putting that against things like land expropriation. Hypothetically, will in the future have land for them, but most they actually do not have the skills to put that land to use. So what are some of the strategies you'd implement given the authority to make fields like mining and also agriculture attractive to the youth? Because I believe we all want to be doctors, lawyers, and whatnot, but then there isn't a lot of emphasis on agriculture. And I do believe we've seen now with COVID-19 that we actually should prioritize protecting the agriculture of our country.
Yes. So my brother, if I can just take us a few steps back.
Yeah.
And if you look at what you say, I think that is the most important discussion on the table. South Africa, as much as it has a lot of first world traits, we still live in a developing country, in the third world, in most parts. And we have not gone past and we have not mastered the second industrial revolution, which is industrializing. We've skipped. We're talking about the fourth IR, which is great. There are opportunities of the fourth industrial revolution in this country, but it's in very limited pockets countrywide that will not benefit the majority of this country. That's a fact.
Most definitely.
We need to be masters of our destiny, and we need to reindustrialize in this country. We need to get industry going, whether it be manufacturing, smelters, mining. We need to create these avenues of opportunity where people that do not have the requisite qualifications as per schooling or university are not cut out of the system, which is a big problem we have. We just say, guys, we need A, B, C, and D, this level of expertise and experience, otherwise the rest of you are left by the wayside. We need to get away from that culture, and we need to understand that people are able-bodied, and we need to get them to work.
Yeah.
So we have three main areas of, in my view, three main areas of, well, the three biggest contributors to our GDP, our gross domestic product, would be the mining, the backbone of the country, that built this country, South Africa. Two, you have tourism, which has been a big contributor to our bottom line in South Africa. And then three would be agriculture.
Most definitely.
So now what we need to focus on is in making these, as a start, areas of opportunities attractive, is creating awareness within schools. Now, we can't wait for people to get to tertiary level, or so higher tertiary level institutions, and then now start giving them pamphlets and areas of opportunity around this. So this is something that needs to be socialized in late primary school and into early high school for sure.
Yeah.
So by the time people get to a point to understand what it is that they can do, they can understand what they have on offer from a jobs or career perspective or from a business perspective in the country, because that is not happening. Right now, you correctly said, you have people who are focusing on the more traditional ways of making an income, becoming auditors, accountants, lawyers, doctors, and those are necessary skills, and they good paying skills. But you reach a saturation point in this country where you have an oversupply of it, because there's only so many high-level paying jobs you can have. And with the majority of the people that live in most of these areas, it's agricultural driven or it's mining driven. Let's focus on creating mining engineers, mining owners, because not everyone can be a mine owner. People that will deal with the geology of the mining industry.
Yeah.
Make them aware of these opportunities at a young age. If you're looking at tourism, hospitality, being in the hotelier business, being in the restaurateur business, getting people to understand that, look, you have people that not only in South Africa come to visit our different parts of the country, but you have people from the rest of the world that come here. How do we best position ourselves to place our people in a situation where they are masters of what's happening in the country? You know, bearing in mind that COVID happened, how do we get people to be more technologically informed?
Yeah.
You know, maybe not advanced, because not everyone is going to be a techie. But people are smart enough to understand that they can make technology work. If you look at something simple right now, two things that I'll mention. One would be blockchain and cryptocurrency, how the rest of the world is taking to it, and the opportunity that is creating. Not only from a breakaway from traditional banking and finance, but also just avenues of wealth creation via NFT, non-fungible tokens, via cryptocurrencies. You've seen what Bitcoin and Ethereum and any other currencies have done. Binance, which is a platform that's been created. I mean, these are guys coming from absolutely nowhere and have created massive value within the global economy. And then secondly, a lot of our people are on social media platforms. As much as they may be distractive in some sense and destructive in another, these have become areas of financial gain. People making money off social media, not just purely from marketing or advertising, but just from an involvement. As much as there is a certain level of influencer that is destructive, there are also influencers that are pushing the limits and doing great things for awareness, for sustainability, and just clever ways of creating income. Because as you know, and I might be repeating myself, if you look at how wealth has become younger over the past 100 years, it's gone from your 60, 70-year-old who was an industrialist, so you've been building railroads or being owning a construction company. It came down to the 50s, 50-year-olds. This would be in the 80s, 90s, when it came to the first technology boom with the Microsoft, Sun Microsystems, Apple Mac, and then the advent of the internet, the dot generation. And then now we're sitting in a place where the next, they say by 2030, the age of the
Sorry, Duzan.
Will be in the... Hello?
Sorry, my brother. Can I just
quickly interrupt you. You know, radio and whatnot, we're supposed to like have the news now at 2. I don't know if I can just plead with you so that we just continue the conversation, say at 2:05, if you still have time.
Not a problem, brother. I'm with you. I'm with you.
Okay, most definitely. All most definitely.
Right. We'll hold on, or will you call me back?
I'll call you back.
Okay, perfect. Not a problem.
Thank you so much. We're just going to have the news now, and then after that, we continue the conversation.
I'm with you, my brother. I'm waiting for you.
Sharp. Thank you so much.
Sure.
Yes, we still have Duzane with that interview. So yes, do not touch that dial. We're gonna continue at 2:05 again. We do have the ever reliable, the ever ready Mr. Nkonzo. Do not touch that dial.
Tembo.
Hey, hey everyone, this is Shady Heavens, and you're keeping it locked onto only the freshest radio station in the East. Freshest radio station in the East. Radio Langa, feeling the sunrise.
Dear fellow South African, starting and building a business is a lot like raising a family. It takes time, patience, constant support, and constant nurturing from infancy to maturity. For many business owners, seeing a business that you grew from scratch struggling to survive, or even being forced to close its doors, is heartbreaking. Since the onset of the COVID-19 pandemic, this has sadly become the situation for many businesses, both large and small, not just in our country, but around the world. Many have had to reduce the working hours of their staff, or even retrench them. Radio Langa wants to help you either start or sustain your current business by giving you a chance to win a massive 10,000 rand. All you have to do is send your business name and a brief description of what your business is about to 33449. Note, your business description must not be longer than 20 words. The more SMSs you send, the better your chances of winning. Do it now. The SMS number again is 33449. T's and C's apply. Radio Langa believes in you. Hashtag rebuild the nation.
Yes, hashtag rebuild the nation. Yes, most definitely. We still do have Duduzano on the line. My brother.
My good sir.
Yes, thank you so much for staying with us. And then, yeah, we're just going to continue our conversation. We're still on agriculture and also focusing on moving the country to the fourth industrial revolution. And you also just said we shouldn't just rush to moving to that. We just have to plug in some holes that we have. So as you say, with you vying, say, for presidency, there's clearly quite a lot to pick up from, and we suppose you probably have a great plan. How do you imagine you'd move the country past being stuck somewhere in the first or second industrial revolution to where it can at least cope with the fourth industrial revolution? Because basically that's where I think the whole world is going now.
Yeah, I think what I do, and it may sound like a backward step, but I mean, it's an important step.
Yeah.
Perfecting the second industrial revolution.
There it is.
Now, we South Africa has got a vast amount of opportunities within the industrializing or reindustrializing. Because if you look at what has happened, a lot of industries have been closed down. We've sold off our steel mills to foreign companies.
Yes.
If you look at the textile industry, I mean, it's because of what China's done, just taking the price points of finished textile goods globally, what it's done to the textile industry in South Africa. So you have people that have hands on jobs,
yeah.
And that is no longer. If you look at textile mills, they've closed down left, right, and center.
Oh, yeah.
And is reintroducing those areas of expertise and opportunity for people to get off their feet at home and get to a place of employment and work where they can use their hands. And we can't ignore artisanal work. We can't ignore people with hand skills and may not have the requisite qualifications, but are very productive and actually very active and smart in areas that are not traditionally seen as mainstream.
No, or that prioritized.
Correct. Yeah. So I think what I do is I take it a step back. Let's perfect what we have within our system, the manufacturing sector, the steel industry, the mining industry, coal, gold, diamonds, manganese, platinum, chrome. Because I mean, these are resources that are very scarce in the world, and we need to realize and say, you know what, with these scarce resources that we have abundance of. I mean, if you look at platinum, 70 or 75% of the platinum resources sit in South Africa.
Yeah.
And not just in South Africa, in the Northwest region. Let's focus. I mean, we can't have the Northwest being home to the largest deposits of platinum globally, and the Northwest is still stuck in, infrastructure-wise, stuck in the 1980s.
Yeah. It's...
That's not fair. You know, that's what we need to focus on and say, guys, how do we get to a point where we are creating, we're getting away from what they call the resource curse. And the resource curse, simply put, is having an unimaginable amount of wealth underground.
Yeah.
And that's the African problem, South Africa included. And that not translating to wealth above ground, being infrastructure and also society benefiting from the wealth.
Okay.
Whereas a lot of other countries, first world countries, do not have the opportunities resource-wise that we have, but are... futuristic in the sense of infrastructure development as well as societies benefiting from those opportunities.
Yeah.
That's what we need to be looking at. The technological stuff, we'll introduce it, we'll run it in tandem.
Yeah.
But we need to understand that we do have an abundance and we need to focus on it.
So it's basically...
The fourth IR, we need to look at new cutting edge ways of staying ahead of the technological curve globally, and I think there is an opportunity, there is space for us to do that.
Yeah,
and that's something that we'll definitely be doing 100%.
So it's basically going back to doing the basics right and actually usher ourselves into the fourth industrial revolution and marrying the two in the end.
I don't want to use the term back to basics because that term is being bastardized in politics. But what I'm saying is mastering our destiny, focusing on the wealth that we have underground and how we create wealth above ground with that. But then also getting to a point where we don't fall behind the curve. South Africa has always been a country that's been ahead of the curve.
Yeah.
From a societal perspective, from a business perspective, from a technology, intellectual property perspective, we've fallen behind. How do we get back there? We can't be speaking about blockchain and seeing bitcoins and other cryptocurrencies in the world doing all sorts of things, but we're not early adopters as a leading African country. Remember, South Africa is not just a country that exists on its own somewhere in the world.
Yeah,
South Africa is a leader in Africa.
Yeah.
We form part of the United Nations. We have a seat on the United Nations Council. We form part of the G20, only African country there. We're a leader in the African Union.
Yeah.
We've chaired the African Union before.
And those...
We're a leader in SADC. We form part of BRICS.
Yeah.
So we have all these wonderful bodies that we form part of, but we're not taking advantage of. We are a serious country on the global scale. It's us, we're not taking ourselves seriously, and that's what we need to be doing.
Yeah, and most countries actually do look to us for leadership, and as much as we do have our own problems, but as you said, we form quite a lot of these quorums and organizations which are pivotal in moving Africa as a continent forward. No?
Yes.
Yeah, and then an interesting phrase you said at the beginning of our interview when you said moving from the politics of desperation to the politics of inspiration. I'm just interested on what would be the dynamics of that whole transition. Is there a way maybe you can just briefly explain how would you go about in changing that whole mindset?
No, absolutely. I think there are two factors that people miss in South Africa.
Yeah.
Generally, and the one is access to finance.
Yeah.
Access to capital. So capital, not only in the sense of a monetary component, but also in the sense of machinery.
Or land.
and everything else that comes in with mixed basket of what it is to develop a business or business opportunity.
Yeah.
And secondly, and the point I'll speak to more specifically is we lack people that we look at as idols, as icons in South Africa. We don't have them. As much as we may have people that are great musicians and so-called influencers, and you know, there's a whole celebrity culture.
But in terms of true leadership.
And true leadership, business, political, people that are moving the needle forward, we have very few of those, if any.
Yeah.
So when I talk about the politics of desperation, so moving away from that to the politics of inspiration, of people like yourself, people like myself, people that might be listening in or are listening in on the show, to say what is it that I am doing to take this journey forward. And we shouldn't be afraid to promote and celebrate other people, because we keep knocking each other down.
Yeah.
We should move away from that and say, you know what, as much as I don't know that person, I like what they're doing, and whatever it is that I can do to support them on their journey, I'll do so. And similarly, hopefully that person will do the same for us. We're missing that spirit of promoting each other.
Yeah.
You know, the Ubuntu that's been spoken about. We need to stop talking about it, and we need to start being deliberate, and we need to showcase it. And I think that's the main thing that's happening a lot.
Yeah.
We don't have people that we can look up to and say, you know what, that dude's done it, you know, let's follow that blueprint.
Well.
Yeah, you know, and if he can do it, you know, I can do it too. We don't have that any longer. We need to create that culture once again in this country.
Yeah, because I think it's just a matter of understanding that, in as much as you can effect change immediately as an individual in the whole of Mzansi, but then in that small community that you live in, you can effect change there, and then it will spill over to the province, it will spill over to the national. So those smallanyana efforts shouldn't be looked down upon, because they become big efforts at the end of the day. No?
You are a role model. You may not know it, but there's people that look up to you because you are doing great things within your setup, your community, your province, and nationally. You know, it's not something that we see. It's something that happens. You know, people come up to you and say, you know, we like what you're doing. We respect you. For who you are. You know, that says a lot, because there are people looking up to us, and then we need to exemplify it. And then we need to move it further, and we can't do it alone.
Most definitely.
There needs to be more people in the system pushing the limits.
Okay. And then before I let you go, lastly, what knowledge would you share with the youth in the face of business failures? Because nobody could have anticipated what we have gone through the past 2 years. Certain businesses have survived, but some of them have been forced to close down. So perhaps as a word of inspiration, perhaps as a word of guidance, what can you say to those who have unfortunately had to close down business and have to start looking elsewhere for source of income?
Yeah, so I think firstly, people should not be I'll get to the specific question of what lockdown has done, but I mean, just as a general response, people shouldn't be new business people, young business people should not be afraid to fail, because you will fail in the business world. There'll be ups and downs. You'll try something, it may not work, and you'll try something else that might work. That's the spirit of being a business person. That's the spirit of entrepreneurship, is starting something up and growing it. So don't be afraid to fail. That's the first point.
Yeah.
Secondly, they say every successful business person or business entity was 10 to 15 years in the making.
Yeah.
So by the time you see someone popping off, jumping off down the line, they've been working their butt off for many years. They've been trying a whole host of things. They've been putting their money where their mouth is. And when it happens, people always think it was an overnight success.
Yeah.
There's no such thing as an overnight success. An overnight success is 10 to 15 years in the making. One of those cases, like everyone else, we've all looked for shortcuts. They don't exist. I can tell you for free, shortcuts do not exist. And then for the people that have gone through a hard time through the pandemic and the lockdown, and I think it's unfortunate that that had to happen, because I think the lockdown management and the practices that were put into place, I think were, and I've said this a few weeks into the first lockdown, in South Africa, it's not sustainable. A lockdown is not sustainable. You cannot keep people at home. We do not have the systems in place. you look at our grant systems through SASA, I mean, just for the grants, the 350 rand that they pay,
yeah,
they face difficulties doing so.
Yeah,
now, we're placing more people on as a burden onto the system. It's not a good idea. You know, yeah, people do need the help. People do need the intervention. 100% we get that. But we also don't want to create a society of dependence. People,
yeah,
that sit at home and just feel entitled to some sort of payment.
Yeah.
So what people need to remember is we're going through an unprecedented time in the global communities, not just in South Africa. It's people everywhere in the world have gone through a shock in the system.
Yeah.
And what the shock in the system has done is created an automatic reset. So as much as there may be turmoil and there's been destruction of people's livelihoods, there's an opportunity for people to get involved 100%.
Yeah.
And we need to look at it from that angle to say, okay, what has happened, whether it was managed poorly or not, that's up for debate.
Yeah.
A lot of us took hits. A lot of people are not here. They don't have businesses. The business is not coming back. People have lost their lives.
Yeah.
But we need to look at it as an event. An extinction level event within the business and the political world, and we need to build from it. There's,
yeah,
opportunities that have arisen, and now is the time to get involved within all the confusion. So let's focus our energies on the negativity of what next, and let's focus our energies on let's get things done.
Yeah.
And the way we're going to get things done is by looking at each other, having open and honest discussions, holding each other accountable, being moral and ethical in our business transactions,
yeah,
and not be afraid to work with other people. We can't look at each other.
Collaboration.
We can't look at each other, because that's the thing. If we all work together,
yeah,
because you know what are the two words that they always throw at us when it comes to budget votes and budget and state of the nation and all these platforms that exist, World Economic Forum and
yeah,
ratings agencies, is economic growth.
Yeah.
Now, the issue in South Africa is when you're talking about economic growth, whose economy are you talking about? What economy?
No worries.
You cannot have economic growth in this country without economic inclusion, and that economic,
yeah,
inclusion of the majority, underprivileged and sidelined.
Yeah,
because to some, it's
just words, because they're not allowed to actively participate in that economic growth, and as much as they want to, but then people always feel sidelined.
Absolutely. Economic growth cannot happen without economic inclusion.
Yeah.
That's my view, and that's something that I'll be tackling. If you're not bringing the majority of the downtrodden poor people in this country on board into,
yeah,
this journey of economic growth,
yeah,
we're wasting our time. Then we're going to have issues of unrest, and then you'll be labeling unrest all sorts of things, and it's just purely people that have nothing,
yeah,
have not been given the opportunity to create something.
Yeah.
And maybe they're going to destruction mode. Let's not get there. Let's be real and let's focus on the issues at hand.
Yeah. My brother, thank you so much. I can have this conversation like for like very, very long time. I'm very interested in your ideas, and thank you so much for taking this interview once again. I do look forward to having you have a chat with you in the near future again. But yeah, thank you so much for this one.
From my side, thank you very much to you and your team. You guys are doing an amazing job. I'm honored, I'm privileged to be on Radio Langa,
yes,
on the Lunchify radio show.
Yes.
I don't take this opportunity lightly. There's no such thing as a big or small opportunity. And
yeah,
I thank you guys for getting into this platform. It means a lot to me. And hopefully next time we'll be having an in-studio interview. Until then,
most definitely.
I'm keeping tuned.
Okay, thank you so much. And do take care, my brother.
Take care,
wish
my brother.
You nothing but
day.
The
Have
best moving forward. Have a good day, man.
Thank you, sir.
Thank you, man.
Whether you're young or old, male or female, from Cape to Cairo, you just can't help yourself but love. You just can't help yourself but love. Radio Langa.